Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Hey, buddy.
Still just thinking about the Nikki Sixx interview, man. Was that fun? Boy, that was really something.
Well, we need parts 2, 3, and 4, just like a Netflix limited series.
Yeah. I mean, it really was. I mean, all the stories he told that were so good. Dad told us he talked to Vince Neil after Vince fell off the stage, and they laughed about the times they had fallen off the stage together. I mean,
no, that was pretty good because, I mean, as you tiptoed into that one, I'm like, all right, this is either going to go really well or all the work we just put in was going to go to hell. He was going to curse at us and hang up. And instead, true pro, he laughed about it, thought it was a good idea. So there you go, innovating now. Stage shows for bands going forward.
Hey, I was a little nervous about asking him about that a little bit, but then I said, no, if I make it fun and say, hey, I think you might need bumpers on the stage to keep everybody on, I had a feeling that was going to play pretty well.
Yeah, because I went to that last show, let me tell you, and that was a spectacle. So to see them rally again, that'd be fun. And watch the cage roll and see what kind of surprises they've got next. So just a fantastic, you know, whatever that was, 15 minutes, 16 minutes, certainly something I'll remember. And lots of friends tuned in. It's like, yeah, you jump in for that. I'm brilliant every night, damn it. Jerks.
The interview will go up on our best of Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. You can get it anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can get it on iTunes. You can use the iHeartRadio app. Wherever it is there, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. Goes up about 15 minutes after the show is over. Find it. We'll put up the best of as well on Twitter at the Fox Sports Radio account. If you missed the Nikki Sixx interview, trust me, you want to hear it. It was some phenomenal stories Nikki told about football, about what's going on in his life now. Great rock and roll stories about Vince Neil falling off the stage. It was so good. It was.
We
so
got Alan Page in, for crying out loud.
We got Alan Page in the show.
And not just because he was waiting to get verified on Twitter.
No. We got
which he
we
is
got
now,
Alan Page.
By the way.
We got purple people eaters on the show. It was pretty good.
You know, when we were kids, just to punctuate it, my older brother, because, I mean, Alan Page starred for the Bears for a few years there. And so whenever, you know, you try to wreck your brothers, some may relate to this. He'd go, hey, guess who's coming? And he'd scream, Alan Page. And he'd bludgeon me and just absolutely freaking bury me when we're outside playing football or whatever we're doing. It's like, oh! Yeah, his ribs have been tender for, you know, 40 years.
Yeah, well, you know, you know, cartilage. You just got to get those cartilage injections. I think it'll be okay.
Terrible.
But speaking of something that was shocking and entertaining, the top of the 9th inning in Boston did not nearly go how the Red Sox thought it was going to go. They're in the bottom of the 9th right now. It was a 2-2 game going to the top of the 9th. The Red Sox had 3 hits. Houston had a tough time breaking through. Jose Altuve tied the game with a home run in the 8th inning. And then the Astros put 7 on the board in the 9th, and they lead it 9-2 in the bottom of the 9th right now. Looks like the ALCS is going to be tied at 2 games apiece. The Red Sox certainly started out well in this game. They were 6 outs away from victory, but Altuve's hit, and then the floodgates open in the 9th inning for the Astros, 9-2. And look, I'll be honest with you. The Red Sox winning, look, the Red Sox are an incredibly popular team, heritage MLB team. You know, if the Red Sox make the World Series, hey, great. You know, Red Sox are terrific. They don't quite have the star power they used to, but still, it's the Red Sox. But with the Astros, everybody hates the Astros.
Yeah.
And you think you want them out, but you really want them in because you want to see them lose, right? It's like the Yankees, right? Everybody hates the Yankees. I don't want the Yankees in. But what's the best World Series you could possibly have, right, for everybody, for interest level and for fans? Because your team is most likely out of the playoffs, so how are you going to find a rooting interest in the World Series, right? You want the Yankees to get to the World Series and then lose because then you can walk away and go, ha, successful baseball season. The Yankees lost in the World Series, right? You need the interest level to get there, and then you want them to lose. It's the same thing with the Astros. You know, you think you don't, but you want them to get to the World Series, and then you want them to lose. You don't want them to lose now in the nameless, faceless ALCS. No, you want them to lose in the World Series. That's where, hey, here comes their comeuppance, where it's the biggest baseball viewership portion of the season. That's when you want to see them lose and see the upset looks on the Astros' faces and say, ah, you're cheating. Look what happened. You really think you do. You want them in the World Series, and then you want them to lose. That's what you want. That's what you should be rooting for.
I do know that these playoffs will renew my crusade for robot umpires. Certainly, we've seen so many instances of just, all right, how do you miss this? And it happened with Eovaldi in what became that monster inning of a breaking ball that it wasn't even, it got, you know, the black of the plate. No, this was well over the plate. Doesn't get the call, and eventually the floodgates open, and we've got problems. But yes, it's also the idea of just, the idea of bringing him in, Jason, I think you pay relief pitchers to be relief pitchers. Saw this with Julio Urias, and we've seen it with numerous guys through the year. And sometimes it works, right? It's like going for it on fourth down. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it's not a situation a guy's used to, which means it's going to get a little dicey. And in this case, once again, for the Red Sox, like, all right, we've gone through. Here we go. We go to the ninth. Hey, let's bring him in. He's starting the inning, so this will be great. No. Different mentality, different, you know, what is it, circadian rhythms and all of those things. And now you got problems.
Mm. So again, that's kind of what you're rooting for, but that's okay. You know, I understand that's what you're rooting for. We'll have more on the NLCS coming up in a few minutes, including something that we said the other night about one of the big players today, but it bears repeating because it's got a lot to do with Derek Jeter. Meanwhile, you know, look, with the NBA going on right now, and the Lakers have now lost the lead to Golden State. Golden State now leads at 86-85, very early in the fourth quarter, however, so there's a lot of time left here.
Yes, Steph just bricked a three.
Yeah, the Ben Simmons suspension by the 76ers has clearly been the top story of the day, right? Ben Simmons did not practice to the contentness of Doc Rivers, so he was sent home. Then he was suspended. Then he was fined $1.5 million. Joel Embiid said, "I have no time for this Ben Simmons drama."
And babysitting, babysitting.
Yeah. I mean, but you need Joel Embiid to, dude, I don't care about Ben Simmons before you understand you have to trade him. Right at this point now, I don't see how Ben Simmons ever suits up again for the 76ers. I don't see it, because if you send him home and you fine him $1.5 million, like, that's it. Like, if you get suspended and get sent home, okay, you know, then you find it and we'll see when you come back. But you get fined that money, this is now, okay, we don't can't have you around. Right. And I told you earlier in the show, this is all on the Sixers, because they should have taken care of it when they knew he didn't want to play there anymore. And he shows up and doesn't care to practice. He wouldn't go in a drill that Doc Rivers wanted him to go in. And then he wound up sending him home. Right. This was on the Sixers. It's completely their fault, because I told you this is untenable. You're not going to be able to get this anymore. You're not going to be able to bring him back into play. Too much bad stuff has happened. But no. They're afraid to make the trade, so they don't. So it's all on the 76ers, right? It's all the 76ers. But to look at this from a different angle right here, okay, Ben Simmons says he didn't want to play. Then he goes and he gets vaccinated, and he comes in and he gets his COVID test and he comes to practice and then kind of dogs it and then gets sent home. And now I don't see how he ever plays for the team again. What was easier? What was easier? This entire run that we have gone on with Ben Simmons and the player he is, or would it just have been easier for Ben Simmons to say, you know what I should do? I should shoot more. I should try to play at the end of games in the postseason. Tell me that's not a better outcome and a better outcome for you, a better outcome for the team, a better outcome for everybody if you just, hey, I will try a little bit more and be more aggressive offensively at the end of games, especially in the playoffs. You want me to shoot more? I'll shoot more. Because if you wind up shooting more and you stink, the coach is going to say, hey, we don't want you shooting anymore, and then it's not an issue. Ben Simmons can't shoot, so he's got to do other things. No one cares and is saying, oh, Ben Simmons. No. if he just was a little bit more aggressive and actually tried. He knew this was the issue, right? Ben Simmons can't shoot. He's not aggressive at the end of games. So how about we do that a little bit? And had Ben Simmons done that, it's better for him because he would have improved his game and he would have been more attractive both to the Sixers or to another team who wants to trade for him. Because now, who really wants to trade for Ben Simmons? Showing up with this kind of attitude, not improving his game, what are you really going to get if you get Ben Simmons? So now the interest around the league is going to wane for a while, and he may just sit not on the team until they come up with a trade that says, fine, we'll give him away for a bag of balls and some powder. For LeBron to be able to do the thing with when he comes to town. I mean, what are you going to do there? So it's bad for him. It would have been better for the Sixers, too, because they might have won more games. Things might have been a different situation. Ben Simmons would still be a star. It would have worked for everybody had Ben Simmons just took ownership of his career and said, this is the player I should be. If you think player I should be, because I keep comparing him to Lonzo Ball, who heard for 3 years, dude, you'd be able to shoot better. If you can't shoot better, you're not going to be around in the NBA. What did Lonzo Ball do? I worked on my shot, and it looks really good, and he gets a big contract, and now he's got a second lease on life as a great up-and-coming young player in the NBA, right? That's what he did. For all the things you could say about Lonzo Ball, his dad did this, that, he knew this is what I got to work on. I went out and did it. We saw videos of it. You saw the improvement that he has. You knew he was dedicated to it, and he did it. Ben Simmons has been the same guy. And rather than try to get better and understand that, okay, I need to be doing X, Y, and Z, no, I'm just going to pout and stay away and then show up at the end. It's much easier to give a little bit of an effort, especially when you know what you have to do. It's not like it was a mystery. You could have just tried to get better, tried to be more aggressive at the end of games, and you wouldn't be here. But this is why we are.
Well, but that's one of the difficult things. We talk about it, and it, you know, is one of the mantras, and I think one of the teachable moments coming out of that Nikki Sixx interview is you're never done, right? You learn process, you learn work ethic, you learn what you need to do, and you keep fighting and clawing is kind of how he said it. Like even going out on tour when they're with Def Leppard. I mean, I had the idea of, week nightly bets for the audience. Like there were so many thoughts that ran through there, pushing each other. And but the same idea here is sometimes you hit a level of success and maybe you say, I'm good. I've got a lot of positive, right? You top defender in the game every year and all these other positive pieces to his game that maybe the incentivization of elevating the shooting part of it, the free throw part of it, isn't in his DNA of wanting to be better at those to the point of putting in hours upon hours of work. I mean, I can't speak to that. I don't know what he does with his spare time, but we see what's on the court. So we have to, and now you create an untenable situation. Not that Doc Rivers didn't help with that. Not that management didn't help with any of that. But now you're at a point where the season is starting. It's no longer 6 weeks out, 8 weeks out. We're getting ready. What are you going to do? Send him to Sacramento for Bagley? I mean, what are you going to do? Right? You got to find salaries that match up and teams that will take the need, knowing that there's the obvious deficiency in his game and his attitude. Right? Because you can't tell me it's 100% that he leaves Philadelphia and all of a sudden, you know what? Now I'm ready to go for the Sixers, not addressing it. And just once Doc Rivers said what he said, read the room, read what that meant. We talked about it the night that happened, Jason. And that was it. It's like, all right, he said it, upped it, and then walked off.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Carmio. What was easier? And Ben Simmons took and picked the exact hardest lane that has torpedoed his own career. Really, some people need. Brought to you by one of our favorite cities, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Plan your trip today at Visit Las Vegas. Las Vegas. .com. Well, the Lakers have some work to do. They are down to the Warriors right now with about 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Maybe the best comparison you could possibly hope for as a baseball player.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Red Sox 9-2. The ALCS is tied at two games apiece. A 7-run ninth inning. For the Astros, does it? Not one, not two, not three, not a 7-run ninth off Eovaldi, who gives up four of the runs in a bit of a shocker. Look, he'd been their best pitcher. Now suddenly the Red Sox on their heels as this series now will go best in for Game 5. Meanwhile, the Warriors on top of the Lakers 100-96. Still 7 minutes left to go, but this has been a Laker lead most of the night, but a big run the Warriors made in the last couple of minutes. And with Steph Curry on the bench, it's just a bunch of guys. It's a bunch of Jags who got this lead out for Golden State to four. Really kind of shocking. And look, I get that opening night is going to be a bit of a thing for the Lakers. And look, they're a work in progress. But this is a night where Steph Curry's 4 out of 18. Okay, he's got 16 points. He's not having a great night, and you're losing. You have not found a way to be able to put this game away with all your all-stars. And the only ones having any good nights at all are LeBron and AD, because they're both 29 and 28 points. Everybody else has been bad. Russell Westbrook has been awful so far tonight. Carmelo Anthony, after a hot start, has not really done anything. And it's fairly embarrassing the Lakers are down to the Warriors at this point with 6 minutes to go in the game.
Third-year guy, Jordan Poole, 20 points in the lineup for your leading scorer. Had a quick injury scare, but back out on the court after checking with the trainers. He's 8 of 18 for the night, 4 of 11 from three-point range. There's your X factor. And the fact that Andre Iguodala is back. Yeah, that's right. Andre Iguodala is still playing meaningful minutes. So it's a weird amalgam here on opening night. But you know what? It's beautiful. Your guy Carmelo Anthony in a Lakers jersey. Jack Nicholson is back in his seat. Mm-hmm. I mean, all is right with the world.
So we'll keep you updated here again. 6 minutes left to go. Warriors still lead the Lakers by a couple of buckets here again, but still 6 minutes left to go. Meanwhile, earlier today in L.A., we watched a lightning strike in the eighth inning of the Dodgers-Braves Game 3 of the NLCS. The Braves were motoring on to a very quiet 5-2 win. It was going to be a 3-0 lead, and then things just erupted for the Dodgers in the eighth inning. Now, Cody Bellinger with a 3-run homer. We'll get into that coming up in a bit. But, you know, after the homer, and Bellinger gets a lot of the credit, because clearly, look, the guy's been terrible all season long. He's got 3 big postseason hits, and yes, he's getting all the attention. I get it, because it's such a shocking thing to see him do what he did. But that could have been it, but the inning continues, and Mookie Betts brings in Chris Taylor with what turns out to be the game-winning run, breaks the 5-all tie, and now the Dodgers have really, it feels weird, but they've kind of seized control of a series that they're down 2-1 in now, because they have the advantage in the pitching matchup for Game 4 tomorrow, and it really just feels like the series flipped. Mookie Betts tonight, 2-for-3 with an RBI and a run scored and 2 walks. And we said this about him last week, but it really bears repeating, because the more he does this, you can see this comparison. Is that when Derek Jeter was in his heyday, a shortstop of the Yankees, there's times when I saw him and I said, this is the best player I've ever seen. This is the best player in baseball the last 20 years, because in big situations, he would always find a way to come through. And that's what the best all-around players do, whether it was a play in the field that he would make, or whether it was stealing a base, whether it was taking the extra base on a throw, whether it was hitting behind the runner, whether it was a double with 2 on, whether it was scoring from second on a play where you shouldn't have scored from second on, whether it's a blue off the fist into right center field to bring in the game-tying run. Whatever the situation needed, Derek Jeter found a way to come through with it, and that's why he was able to expand his legend so much, because of what he was able to do in the postseason. And really, for the 90s and into most of the 2000s, Derek Jeter was the best player I've seen, because you talk about someone who did everything across the board, not just a guy that hit 35 home runs, drove in 125 runs, and hit 300, but yet in the field was not great, or did it as a DH, but the best all-around player in baseball really for almost 20 years was Derek Jeter.
And part of it
is what you do in the postseason, because what he did in the postseason really was unmatched by so many. The guy's got 5 World Series, and without him the Yankees probably have 0. So, you know, that is part of it, because you have to factor in the postseason. I kind of feel that way about Mookie Betts now, who is 29 and has already won a couple, and every time the Dodgers, the Red Sox before this, needed a play to be made, who was the guy that made it? Either the great play in the field, like Mookie Betts has done and continues to do, whether it's a base hit when the team absolutely needs it with a runner at second and two outs in the eighth inning, or stealing a base that turns into a run because he's able to take that extra base. Whatever that moment needs, Mookie Betts provides it. So all the talk about, hey, Mike Trout's the best all-around player in baseball and all these things, yeah, Mike Trout is incredibly talented, but the postseason and being able to do it in the clutch when your team needs it is a big part of it, and there's nobody that's been better than Mookie Betts.
Wait, so come on, like, come on. You got to be fair, though. Mike Trout doesn't get to play in the playoffs. How dare
okay.
you?
We can't, okay, but I can't I can't put that against Mookie Betts.
But I can't put it against him because his team
stinks. I can't put it against Mookie Betts.
He's one man.
He did it.
He's one man.
It's
not his fault his team is trash. Finally someone rises up to meet his level of excellence on the field, and he can't play because he's hurt.
Listen. If you go
leg finally gave from carrying these guys all these years.
If you go to a carnival, right, and they have a thing where you can dunk somebody, right, by throwing a softball, right? Let's say you can do that, right?
Okay.
You can dunk somebody by throwing a softball. And one guy throws it five times and dunks the guy twice. All right, that's pretty good. Then another guy throws it 10 times and dunks it six times. Oh, all right, that's really good. Well, the first guy could say, but I only had five throws and I dunked the guy twice. The other guy could say, yeah, I had 10 throws, but I dunked the guy six times. The guy that dunked the other guy six times is better than the first guy. Yes, he had more chances, but he also came through in when his team needed. And it's about winning. It's about winning World Series, about winning in the playoffs. I can't give that a mark against Mookie Betts and say, hey, sorry, Mookie, but the other guys don't get a chance. It's not a participation league. If the MLB was a participation league, I would say, okay, we're all going to get trophies at the end. We're all going to go out to Pinkberry and get frozen ice cream, and it's going to be great. We're going to have an end-of-season party at Jennifer's house, and we're going to have so much fun. No, it's about achieving, and it's still about doing things on the field. So, yeah, Mike Trout doesn't get the chance. His team is not very good, but at the same time, Mookie Betts gets in the playoffs, and he's done it. He's been on good teams, but he's also been a really good part of good teams, and his teams do get in the playoffs because of him. So I can't say, all right, you know, you're equal because – no, a part of it is the playoffs. You succeed there, it's a bigger thing.
Now, first I want to go – that's the first positive spin anybody's had on Pinkberry in a reference in a while. I just haven't heard Pinkberry mentioned. I know some of them closed, and you know that whole business model has been
too
difficult
bad. I mean,
to run.
Was,
in the
they did so well for so long, Pinkberry, and now it's like, ooh, who goes to Pinkberry?
Yeah, I think there's some stories to that too, though.
Maybe.
As to the company itself, but we'll leave that alone for now. No, when you get down to it, yes, you got to make the most of your opportunities, and playing on a team that consistently wins and magnified by being in Boston and Los Angeles, a couple of places that you're going to get your media attention and your love. And he's a humble guy, and he look, from all accounts, you know, this is one of those guys you want as your league ambassador. Getting in front of the cameras and just, you know, all things right with the game, except for that whole little cheating scandal that, I mean, let's call it what it is. He was there. But now, even today, right, he had I don't think I've ever seen anybody miss a fly ball by losing it in the sun cooler than he did. Just kind of threw up his arms like, yep. All right, then it bounced, and he retrieved it and got it back in. But it was just, you know, there was no panic. It was like, hey, you know, stuff happens. You know, we're playing at 2 in the afternoon for some reason. Oh, wait, the Lakers are in town. This is stupid. And he should have yelled that, knowing the camera was on him. But he's been everything they could have hoped for, and then some. And, you know, Dodger fans, this season, given some of the struggles, we've chronicled Bellinger and the home run, their win percentage chance before Bellinger's home run was at 6%. But you have those sporadic bursts of stardom and reminiscing to the players some of these guys were. Taylor and others have had some big moments. Betts has been your consistent guy, right? It's been him and, before injury, Max Muncy that helped carry you through. No disrespect to the greatness and legacy that is Justin Turner. But you've got very consistent. And Betts came in, became a leader, and just goes to work. So I'll celebrate it. I like trying to thrust him into that Jeter-like space, though. I mean, that's good. That's good. I like that because we need that guy. Because who else would it be, right? Who else would be on that medal stand right now in Major League Baseball, Smith?
Let's see. Hang on. Well, DeGrom would be on the medal stand, and Alonso, and maybe Aaron Loop. I mean,
you're
no,
fired.
I mean, look, it's hard to put.
You brought the Mets into it. You're fired.
No, I mean, look, like there's guys that you want to put out. Like, you want to put Bryce Harper out there, but is Bryce Harper really as good as
this year's MVP, though?
Stop. Don't keep saying that. It's not. He's not.
I'm speaking it into existence.
No, stop.
You can't just put guys randomly into teams and try to throw that into the show. I can't let you do that.
No. Look, the image of Bryce Harper is better than the reality of Bryce Harper. He had a good year, but suddenly it's, oh, because Bryce Harper's been good and makes a lot of money, let's over-credit him for the year he's having because we want to give him the MVP because we want him to be a superstar. Now, I'm sorry.
You know what? That we would actually become, in that line of thinking, he would be the first guy to ever be celebrated for the amount of money he makes because normally that's the first line when a guy sucks. Making $30 million a year. Look how terrible he is with runners and score.
Look, there's a few guys that are on that are close, but the overall, the best all-around players, you know, we talk about defense, we talk about clutch. So when you say all-around, when you say all-around, it's not just about defense, right? When I say, who's your best all-around player? It's like, well, you know, look what the guy does defensively. It's like, okay, defense is great, and I like defense. His defense does not matter. I know, and I like defense, but when I say all around, it's who's able to do it in every type of circumstance and situation. That's more what I think of all around. It's who can do it in the clutch, who can do it, who can make the right play when his team needs it. That's more what I think of all around, not just here's a guy that's going to give you the three big stats and, oh, his WAR is 5.6. No, all around is who can do it in the clutch, who can lead, who can take on these different mantles of a team, not just, well, who's great offensively and who's great defensively.
No, I love it. It's a five-tool game, right? We go back to the all-century book, kind of like the NBA is going back in 75 years. You're going to have the top 75. I mean, we'll see how many of the guys from the top 50 get ousted here. But maybe a new lithograph will be revealed and up for sale like they did all those years ago. With Major League Baseball, you know, same thing. You're trying to figure out, you know, the ebb and flow of the game and what's going to importance. I like that you got that money ball line in there. You tried to sneak that in there. That was really good. I appreciate it because defense doesn't matter. But it does, and especially in the playoffs. Right? It's one of those regular seasons issues that you just push aside. It's like, that's great. He won a gold glove? Really? Yeah, he hit 320 with 38 homers and 110. It's like, but why is he getting a gold glove? It's like, isn't that the silver slugger? I'm confused because it just – most – times a guy wins a gold glove, he happened to have a great offensive season, so it really never made sense to me. But yes, we'll celebrate Mookie Betts for you here. I'm not letting you put those Mets guys in as much as you want.
I tell you, Mookie's the guy, man. I mean, Mookie is—he just is that good. He does everything. He does everything you want a star player to do.
Right? I believe his middle name is Bleepin' too.
Yeah, he's Mookie Bleepin' Betts, right? That's pretty good. I like that. Hashtag Frostburg for that. But really, he does everything you want him to do. And not only does he do it, but he exudes professionalism. And this is a guy you give that kind of money to. I mean, there's not many guys you can give $300 million. Playing under that mantle is really difficult. And as you're seeing, hey, Francisco Lindor, different player when he's playing as a $300 million player. And hopefully he has a better year, because if he has a bad year next year, the Mets are going to try to get out of that contract and trade him. I mean, not everybody can play under the veil of all that kind of money. And clearly Mookie Betts is that kind of guy who can. I mean, everything you want out of him, he does. He's exactly what you want in a baseball superstar. 100%. Everything you want, top to bottom.
You just ordered yourself a Mookie Betts pillow, didn't you?
Oh, no, because that's not worth as much money as an Ohtani pillow. I'd want the Ohtani pillow to be able to spend that, yeah. I'm like Nikki Sixx. I'm gonna make the General Electric light bulbs and then see how you like.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. We got Rick Bucher coming your way in about 10 minutes to break down night one of the NBA. But look, I know I have said the Lakers are a work in progress. They're going, it wouldn't surprise me if they're 500 the first eight, you know, the first 15 games. Mm-hmm. They're sitting around 7-8, 8-7, something like that. But what I saw tonight out of them against the Warriors, that was embarrassing. All right, this is a night where you're playing at home, you're unveiling Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony, and you are playing a Warriors team that is still wounded and looks like the team that couldn't even get into the playoffs last year. Steph Curry shoots 5 out of 20 from the floor for the night by 7. I mean, that's just so incredibly embarrassing for the Lakers. And what's even more embarrassing is that I watched Russell Westbrook not really be Russell Westbrook because there were so many times down the floor he's not handling the ball. He's a ball-dominant guy. I mean, were you just trying something new? Hey, you know what we do, Russ. We know what you like. We know you like to handle the balls. Here's what we're going to do. Make me handle the ball more? No, less. We're going to have you like stand in the corner and set up for a three. Why? I don't really do that. No, but we're going to do that. It's going to be great. I need some big changes from the Lakers after game one. I need Russell Westbrook to be that ball dominant guy and be someone that helps make the team better, because 8 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists, that ain't going to cut it. Right? I mean, yes, I know we got big nights from LeBron and Anthony Davis, but that ain't going to cut it when you got nobody else in double figures. And this is a Lakers team that is crying for more help. They don't have a lot of guys that can score outside of LeBron and AD and Melo a little bit off the bench. I mean, you're not going to get him a lot. You're not going to get more than 10 points out of him. The Lakers need a bit of a wake-up call, and hopefully this was it for them, because they just looked like a team that was old and had a tough time keeping up with the Warriors flying around the court, who are still moving the ball well. But really, the lack of involvement of Russell Westbrook was just stunning to me. And that's something that the Lakers just cannot repeat. There's no way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just the breakdown is off in the final minutes. This was Jovan Buha. He was finished minus 23, but, you know, in this snapshot, when he was on the bench, they were plus 13. Bench scoring, 51-26 is your final. Westbrook missed all of his three-point attempts. At times looked shaky as to what the role was when they collapsed on him in the lane. And then guys have to knock down shots. Again, 51-26 when you're scoring. I mean, Jordan, you just expect him to play defense, but 13 minutes played, just 2 points. Bazemore with 8 on 3 of 9. James and Davis, they combined for 67 points and 22 boards. So they did their job. And one thing you mentioned, Steph Curry's shooting. And while he went 5 of 21, 2 of 8 from 3, his first triple-double, Jason, since January 22nd of 2016.
Whew, wow. That long? It's been 5
since
years?
Since 2016. How crazy is that? They shot that up when they went to do his post-game interview. And I'm like, all right, read that again. Make sure that that's right, that you just don't need another cup of coffee or someone to slap you upside the head to wake you up. No, that was the stat line. Amazing. Wiggins had 12. Remember, no Wiseman, no Klay Thompson, obviously. So finding points and production elsewhere in this one. And Russell Westbrook, look, it's going to be the work in progress. What do we always say? They should start on Christmas Day for those that believe that. Then until Christmas Day, just shut up and treat it like an exhibition game.
Oh, you mean, wait, you mean these games don't count? Oh, fine. Yeah, we're good.
You know what I mean? Like, but for those that always do that, it really doesn't start until Christmas Day. Yeah, okay, yeah, fine. Yeah. Then save all the evaluations, put the poison pens down, turn off your microphones, whatever you need to do. Don't express anything other than admiration that they're on the court.
Yeah. Yes. Just like when I was a Mets fan when I was like 5 years old, all I cared was that they were in blue and orange and they were really bright on the television and they were running around and doing something. It didn't matter if they won or lost or made errors. Boy, they just looked really sharp in the blue and orange. It was so fun. So much more fun to watch than the Yankees. Oh, I don't know. Just be excited they're doing something together as a group. That's how to be the best fan possible. Woo. So how bad of opening night was this for the Lakers, the Nets, and more? Keep it right here. That's coming up next. Jason Smith, Mike Harmon, you are listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hello, everyone.